Good afternoon, everybody. This is Alexandra Metters of GalacticConnection.com, and today is July 23rd, 2013. I am on the road today. Believe it or not, I'm in a little teeny tiny town called Parsons, Tennessee, and I managed to find an internet connection so that I could interview Martin Ellis of Serper Organization. Now, you might be wondering, I had just interviewed him a little while ago, and you might be wondering why again. And I have to say, I am so impressed with the work that he's doing and who he is and what he's trying to bring to the world. I just genuinely really want to share that with the rest of you. So please take the time to listen to this entire audio and any of the other audios that he's done, not only with me, but with others, and really consider the advantages of doing this sort of training. Because I know I'm going to. So, Martin, how's it going?
Well, I'm very well. Thank you very much. And it's always a delight to talk to you.
Thank you for showing up today. I know you're calling from, what, London, right? Do you actually live within London?
Well, actually, I used to live there. And I am now living really on the South Coast. And so I lived in London for about, gosh, maybe 38, 39 years.
Nice.
And I'm very much still, I guess, a Londoner, but I've, you know, been here for about 15 years, so I'm slowly becoming more acclimatized to the kind of Dorset way of life down on the South Coast here.
The Dorset way of life. It just sounds so difficult, you know, the Dorset way of life.
Yeah. They drink a lot of cider here, but not that I touch the cider.
I was going to say, and here I am. I'm in Tennessee where y'all have been fixing to go down the street and have yourself
a... Yeah. I can do that one as well, I think. I'm poorly, though.
So, hey, the reason I called this interview again is because we didn't really have a chance to cover such a in-depth topic of ET contact. And one of the things I thought that we might do is cover some of the advantages to the training that you're going to be providing here throughout the United States. So I think where I want to start is, what sort of tools will people be learning at these seminars?
Sure. So the daytime delivery of interpersonal skills will be helping people to do a number of things. For example, being more aware of their electromagnetic field or bioelectromagnetic field, and the old term is aura. And so there'll be exercises to get in touch with that energy field, as well as to move it out. And so there'll be this understanding and practice theory, as well as practical learning in terms of moving one's electromagnetic field out. And the purpose of that is to soften and sense within the environment, the immediate environment, ready for contact. So that's one aspect which aligns itself directly with initiating contact. Also, we'll be looking at understanding information, incoming, downloading of information, and learning how to discern the difference between one's own thoughts, the thoughts that's being used, and those parts of information that's coming through.
Interesting.
And also we'll be looking at emotional intelligence, how to listen with your feelings, your tummy chakra. And so we'll be looking at an emotional intelligence aspect too. And so there's a number of areas that are very kind of orientated towards being receptive to contact. And of course there's meditation in various forms. There's listening meditation, there'll be hopefully time for walking, and there's a different approach there. And anybody can try the meditations. You can go either slow or fast. You know, we can go shallow or deep, and it really depends on where people are and what they feel comfortable and happy with.
Yeah, I really like the fact that you're doing the one-on-one, and you're really making sure that the group is small enough to provide that special individual, you know, assistance. I think that's really important. People are looking for that today. And I wanted to also ask you, Do you feel that these tools are very important for us to be learning at this particular time of of the ascension process? I mean, do you feel there's
Well,
some
I think
urgency there, you know?
I'm not so sure about the urgency. I will say they're incredibly natural, and the emphasis on the trainings will be to emphasize that we have these innate natural abilities, and we just seem to have not been schooled in it. Our education system takes us in a completely different direction towards the working environment. But I think it's relevant to be now working on a more sensitive level. I think it's relevant to be guided towards those who can provide some instructions and directions, and maybe Sherpa workshops is one such. And so, yes, I think it is time for those who are feeling pulled internally, where they feel there's something to be done. They want to learn something. They want to wake up a little bit more. There is something within them that's pulling them to do something that was never done before. And in that sense, be aware and awake of what you're drawn to do. And so that may well be various workshops and so forth that are to do with intrapersonal. Now, the intrapersonal aspects of Sherpa, which is very key, very important, is the internal being receptive internally. And so it goes way beyond contact. It also makes one a sensitive human being, and you can employ these skills when you're engaging other people too.
Well, you made a really good point about the fact that there's so much downloading going on. So the fact that we supposedly have pierced the veil more so than we have in the past, obviously, then wouldn't there be more of us receiving more information than ever before, to the point where we're having to kind of sift through that, especially if you're not used to it. If you're not accustomed to it, or if you don't even perceive yourself to be somebody who can really receive that information, if that veil is truly getting pierced, is this something that's helping those people that are kind of just waking up, just coming to with their gifts?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I mean, there's going to be a number of telltale signs with this veil, if you will, that's becoming more and more thin. So, for example, if those whom are on a self-discovery path, as your audience clearly will be, and those who are beginning it and setting out, will discover that to drop into a quiet state of mind seems to be a little bit easier than usual, for example. And so dropping into silence and accessing that sound of silence, which is a frequency that Buddhists often hook onto as part of their meditation focus, will be a little bit more easily accessible. And so you'll get out of the ambient frequency, if you will, you'll get the aha moments. I call it aha moments, where you begin to kind of get answers to questions that may have come by you a long time ago. And also, you get information which is inspiring. And but it's not just, say, one or two bits, it's a whole concept. You start receiving concepts. But these concepts have, how you say, like, an intelligence about them interfaces with your feelings. So you get a tummy, you get a sense of this concept from your tummy, which unpacks information. And that information is this broader concept, and it draws you to do these things, and you're being pulled and more inspired. And these are some telltale signs that I would suggest people should be aware of with this thinning of the veil, as it were.
Yeah, and actually heeding it, listening to it, allowing it to guide you. I mean, this whole trip across the United States with my husband and I has been exactly that, just listening to that pull. So, what is your definition of ascension?
Waking up. Simply put, it's an awakefulness, and in that wakefulness, one is internally ascending, but of course you're actually moving in all directions at the same time. So it's rather like if you imagine a cross, and you have a vertical line and you have a horizontal line, and you're in the center. And so the ascension process is that there's this wakefulness that moves out like a ripple in all directions. And so, yeah, so it's almost a sense of touching unity, but it's not unity. So it's wakefulness. It is your consciousness beginning to move in every direction, and it's moving there. And it's rather the opposite of the imagery of being pulled up. You know, this is symbolic, really. But
it's unifying with Mother Earth. It's more becoming. Yeah,
it's all exactly. It's unification of Earth, star, male, female, all coming together and moving out.
Yes.
When they're in sync, when they're resonating in a beautiful harmonic, and one's energy systems are all well aligned, the chakras, like boxes, all neatly stacked, if you like, and the whole bioelectrical field is free, is operating its optimum amount. In that stillness, in that moment, then you enter into a stillness. Then you feel as though you're really getting big. Yeah, is your electromagnetic field moves out, softens, and in that moment, consciousness begins to move out very, very quickly. So, but once it's moved out, you don't want necessarily to come back to the old drudgery of life. So, the idea is that you really move into a wider field of view. And you keep that wider field of view, and you run with that in your life, and then you move again, and then again, and then again, and so forth. And so the ascension process in that example is staggered, if you will. You know. But yet, having said that, if you hit unity, bang, you've really internally ascended and overcome, surmounted many of the obstacles that are before us.
Yeah. So now, how do you define that as being any different than, say, you know, your old ancient text and scriptures that talked about unceasing prayer? Is that one and the same in your book?
No, entirely different. I think this is beyond language, beyond concepts. So other than what scripture may well infer. But at the deeper root, you know, I think out of which comes traditions, out of which comes, you know, a following of a charismatic, out of which comes a religion and so forth. So I think at the very heart and very center, we have this ascension process, which is beyond words. It's ineffable. It's an ephemeral concept. It's very difficult to hold, if you like. So when we try to, it comes out in terms of, you know, the concepts that we see in scripture and so forth, which is a very veneer, raw form of it. But it's like holding on to the wind, and you catch some of it in your hand, but it's only part of it, and you then have scripture. You then have the written word, but.
Beautiful.
But in the center of that, beyond that, within it and beyond it, there is no concept. There is that which cannot be described, cannot be expressed.
Yes. Yeah. The English language is just so restrictive when it comes to moments like this to describe what you're feeling and thinking.
Well, yes. Yeah, so, I mean, also, for example, when the dewdrop becomes a shiny sea, how does the dewdrop, when it becomes a dewdrop again, express that which is inexpressible? It's impossible. That's why many who have experienced these labels of such as samadhi, satori, you know, cosmic consciousness, etc., and so forth. Well, they're just labels. Point to the center of this unity experience, which is. And nameless, it's cannot be described. It's ineffable. So, yes, language, human language is very coarse in trying to capture. You know,
and be expansive enough. So, tell me a little bit about your training and your particular experience. You said you had trained with a very specific master that you really honor over there in England. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I initially met this master. In fact, I met him here. I helped to put on a course by which a number of UK people came and met him. And as a consequence of that, energetically, we really worked well together, and I was invited to go back to Bali. That's where his revered in Indonesia as the people's god, if you will. And I was very, very fortunate to go back with him and his team, and spent much time around him, and got a lot of teaching from him, and worked energetically in his presence too, as well as those
who
were very close to him at the ashram.
What is his name, Martin?
His name is Ratu Bagus, and if you Google him, he's come a very long way in the last 10 years or so, and it's very difficult to describe. He's the ultimate sort of spiritual warrior. He's well tooled up with power animals that come from his chest, his knees, his elbows, his eyes, and anybody who's in front of him who is sensitive to see will see ribbons of golden light coming towards you, and this has a processing effect of clearing blocks within you.
Wow!
And so I had the good fortune to become very close with him. I train exceedingly hard, and he considered me as a son, a second son. And so I have a special relationship still with him on an astral level, of course. This training was very, very powerful, and it is working with energy that courses through the body, and it aligns the chakras and cleans the meridians. And so you're either a slow or a fast process that you can go through.
Right.
And you're hours and hours and hours. It's a cathartic shaking, and there's a hard and soft practice. The hard practice is the standing for hours and hours and hours of processing, and you're receiving this divine light. And then the soft practice is where, which composes probably about a fifth of the extra training, is sitting, meditating, and then expressing what you see and what you feel.
Wow.
He is an amazing master, and I certainly recommend anybody who is interested in Qigong or any energy work to actually go and look him up and Google him. He's a wonderful man. He speaks little English. And what he says is very funny, and he uses humor as an energetic healing process too. And so he's a lovely man. He's an absolutely delightful man. Yeah.
Now, how do you spell his name?
R-A-T-U.
Okay. Ratu.
And Bagus, Bagus.
Okay, Bagus. And at least now everybody knows when they Google his name who you're speaking about.
Yeah.
Wow, that sounds awesome. And so how long ago was this?
Well, that was, that was 10 years ago. And so since then, there is a very strong link. And he's always present. I mean, you'll find actually a number of people who, in the story of themselves, have a book within. If you go back past over the chapters and so forth in those very many lives of coming and going, there'll be different masters been assigned to you in different lives, and they never go away. They're there always with you and for you.
Very good point. Very good point.
Yeah, and if you're able to, one is able to connect with an energy master who is able to scan you, and they'll be able to work out and see the various symbols that is within your electromagnetic field, or reflections of those symbols that have been there and that you carry with you.
How can you do that?
I'm sorry?
Can you do that?
I can't do that, no. There are gifted masters who are able to do so, and they can see these symbols, and they'll see basically your provenance, your spiritual provenance, if you like, and all the various masters that put those symbols in your energy system. People who are on a path of self-awareness are having these inserts, and they are attached to a master that will never leave you.
That's a really good I'm really glad you said that, because I had I really was blessed after the accident and was very fortunate to run into, with parentheses around it, several master teachers who substantially changed my life forever. I mean, to take me from a state of absolute devastation, and I mean physically, emotionally, mentally, spirit, I mean, I was just thrashed. It's good to hear that there's a piece of them within me in a different way than how I perceived it. I just got it
Sure.
when you were saying that.
Yeah.
It was awesome to hear.
Yeah. You can. Yeah. I mean, we have a poor memory of these things. So one can go internally and seek and ask and make that internal connection. And you may also, one wants to go to sleep and ask to remember, to recall. And in that loving request, sincere loving request, and try it several times before you go to sleep, ask to remember and recall, and that will go out. And very often you'll find that the master will come forward and present various scenarios or dream shapes and so forth that may reawaken you or realign you or reveal that all those dreams you've been having, there's been a master on the end of them pulling the strings.
I definitely.
So we don't we're not in voids, we are coexisting multidimensionally with many that we have engaged with in long past and now.
Yes. So basically, did you start your spiritual walk this 10 years ago, or did it start before your training with
No,
Ratu?
yeah, no, yeah, exactly. So no, it came long, long time, 30 or so years ago. It was age 21, when at the time when I was an international gymnast, when my life turned up, well, my life was upside down.
Literally speaking.
Exactly, no surprise. It was about upside down again. And what had happened was I met a gentleman who led me into a unity experience, and that was an absolutely astonishing, amazing, incredible, ineffable moment of utter wonder. And I've wrote about that in Jeff Becker's book, Path to Contact, which people can go and look at. I think it's available on Amazon and Kindle version too. And back then at 21, my life totally changed, utterly. My mother was very surprised and a little bit bewildered and a little bit worried because her son literally came home hours later, and she was very curious to see that I was seemingly just very different, very, very different. And so I just really that still and was still feeling the effects of bliss. It's a blissful state. The unity, and it was a touching and a tasting of unity. And this is the true, in my view, the true understanding of rebirth, because it's a holistic change. And there's no part of you that's untouched. And for me, it took 10 years to understand what it was. And it came to me via a bookstore in London, Foyles, and the book was peering out and it said Mysticism by R.A. Gilbert. So I wrote to him and explained to him exactly what happened and went through the sensation step by step, systematically, what I was experiencing. And he gave me the explanation that it was a cosmic consciousness experience, a mystical experience. And so it's from there that everything changed for me,
Awesome.
And conscious contact started to occur more or less immediately. And there was this unpacking of sort of abilities that were coming forward now. So I had to cope with that paradigm shift at the same time, still swinging around the bars.
Wow, that's quite the dichotomy.
Yeah. That's the high bar, not the other bars.
I was gonna
Yeah, quite so. No, I was definitely full of the spirit.
Oh
Yeah.
God, that's too
Whilst
funny.
I was swinging around the bars, I was full of the spirit. So
I
there
thought
you
you were
go.
talking about ale.
Not at all, not at all, not at all. I mean, as a gymnast, I mean, my focus, my love, had been gymnastics and sports. So I lived a very sheltered existence from about the age of 11 through my 20s.
Are you still doing any gymnastics?
No, I'm not. I mean, that's feels like a while ago. I went back in my late 30s as an enjoyment, just to get fit again. And I was on swinging around the bars and pommel horse, and I wasn't tumbling because I had a bad knee injury going back. So, but
one
no,
of
today
those.
I'm sorry. Yeah, don't we have them? Don't we have them? So, no, today mainly it's down at the gym. Cardiovascular and swimming, that's mainly my
Well,
interest.
we just want to keep you around, okay? So we're not going to let you do any more gymnastics, okay? No, I'm kidding. So Martin, tell us a little bit about how ET contact will, you know, just the experience, how does that expand one's spiritual path? You know, how does that expand their perception of life?
Yeah, well, it comes in steps and stages, generally speaking. Although seeing in the sky, you know, can have quite an effect on one's consciousness, you know, because you're seeing something outside of your normal comfort paradigm. And so that's quite challenging, and there's no reference points for that. So there's a shift there in your perception of reality and so forth. Beyond that, it's a step process of awakening. Some people who have activations may have third eye activations, may see images, lots of images, graphics and so forth. Others will sense a feeling of expansion, a feeling of love and so forth. Sometimes apprehension because there's these shifts and changes going on. But it's a step-by-step process in which one is now slowly seeing the constructs around oneself begin to appear to be rather superficial. So there's a step process of awakening to the set programs, the way society is constructed and so forth. If one's in the meditation practice, then this is a very good advancement there to go into science a bit easier. But also, you see, the thing with what we're trying to get across with contact is that it's really seeing it through our star cousin's eyes. For example, they're floating around in a wonderful star craft, and people will say, okay, there you are, look, you can see a power up. And ET's thinking, well, okay, we've done this. How many times have we done this? We're beeping around here and we're doing these power-ups and so forth, but we're not quite sure we're actually really getting it. They've got to do something themselves. And it's not really about us. It's about them, you know.
Right.
It's only got their head in their hands and thinking, my gosh, you know, when are they going to do stuff down there for themselves? And so for us, you know, the key phrase really with SERPA is it's not about the lights in the sky. It's about you on the ground. And so the relationship building there, which is a very subtle relationship building, but it's there in order to expand one's understanding of the nature of themselves, see through the current programs that we have, and begin that internal process of becoming more sensitive, attuned with others, knowing that we all suffer in creation, mm-hmm. in the physical creation, we all suffer.
Yeah.
And having a deeper understanding about that, and also trying to bring forwards, you know, the best possible aspects of oneself that you can bring, and kindness too, and honoring life, and being non-prejudicial, and so forth and so forth. And so these are internal processes. That's a step-by-step process. And this is the real gem of contact.
Wow, that's incredible. And so basically, this is really a program buster.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a program buster, and it's also an opportunity to make that step towards that ascension.
Interesting.
Yeah, and looking back at that concept of ascension that I put forward earlier, is that there is this expanded awareness and wakefulness.
In addition to that, I think when I look back on my path, I remember some of the first aha moments or the amazing, miraculous healings that I received, okay, after the accident. I mean, like in the blink of an eye, bam, something happened to me. And when you have that continue to occur, the first time you're thinking, oh, wow, I'm lucky. But then it just continues to build from there. And once you get the fact that your life can be that every day, and you just walk within your higher self's guidance,
Well, this is where you're experiencing that now. This you're translating. You're internally internally now getting to a frequency that is beyond this side of the veil, and now engaging the other side of the veil.
Correct, correct.
And so it's a pulling. It's a pulling.
Yeah, and I think it's really important for those that have done such a great deal of work to still be able to engage this reality and not be so allergic or disgusted or what's the word, just being so negatively impacted by it.
And this is part of the ascension, in my terms, process of wakefulness. It's to see it as it is, and also to see that it's a tragic comedy. However, it's duality, and of course, in duality, there is left, there is right, there's up, there's down, there's good, there's not so good, and so forth, etc. And quite frankly, it is correct and right that it is as it is. And so just observe, watch, and the idea actually is to try and stay center and not make what's the word? Try not to take sides, but be in the center, be balanced in the center, and just observe and watch.
Yes.
That way, and it's tough, difficult, it's tough. I'm going to be the first to say
Absolutely.
that what one teaches is what they need to learn too. So I want to be, realistic there too. But is to try to get out of, the good, bad, the happy, the sad, and try to, of course, down the center, because you see. The way the world works, there's a free world, a free will universe, and all is allowed. And so one has to really, as difficult as it may well seem, allow that to be, and not to be judgmental, and know that all sentient life will ascend, if you will, and it's a process, and some are there, moving towards that a little bit quicker than others, and so be it. But don't make any judgments. We can. It's difficult. It's tough. But the world in which we live is a wonderful opportunity that's testing us, and we're learning so much. But try not to be judgmental. It's difficult, I know, but that's the idea
Yeah.
of centered.
Yeah, I remember going to a couple seminar. This is years and years ago, and they were doing some work regarding DeMartini. And he had stated that, hey, it's just as important to not get too happy because everything is on a wave, like a like a sine cosine wave. And so if you're getting way too happy, then you will ultimately balance out that polarity by getting very sad. Now that may be only for a few seconds or whatever, but the ultimate point to that whole discussion was to try to maintain a sense of neutrality. And one of the best ways to do that is to be in an observer mode than a participatory mode.
Yeah, correct. I mean, we have to participate because we're co-creating in cooperation with others. We aren't islands. We
Right,
live,
right.
and so let's get factual. And so, yeah, I sometimes when, and I remind myself of that fact that you were telling me there about that neutrality. When somebody says, "How are you?" and I said, "Well, not so good, and not so bad. I'm trying to be somewhere in the middle." But also, there is a biological. There's also a biological swing here too. With peptides will go up, peptides will go down, peptides go up. But, there's this readjustment, realignment, and balancing. So exactly so. Very happy one day, up next day, not so happy, maybe down. And
Right.
so there is a sense of equilibrium and balance internally.
It's and it's something that, I don't know if responsibility is too heavy of a word, but it is a very important thing for us to try to maintain on a daily basis because we are definitely the ones that are blazing the trail and holding the space. You know, how do we hold the space if we can't maintain a sense of, you know, maintenance or neutrality or whatever you want to call it? But it can be very challenging. But I think once you get to a place where you can see it, like you've said, where it just is, if you go into the isness, you know, you realize that everything is as it is supposed to be. I do know people that say, now, come on, how can you call this reality a reality of divine order? Well, I have a difficult time with that, too. Okay, I really do. I mean, I don't even feel like we're in a real true reality. I think we're in a virtual reality, and I think that something seriously went wrong, you know. But I was going to ask you, you know, how what you thought about that, because they talk so much about.
First thing is one speaks their own truth first. So you know, so if where one is where they are, and they say that, you know, this is how it is, and so that's fine. That's just exactly, and we have to accept that they're in the experience there, and they're feeling internally that this has a divine component to it, and that's what they're feeling and sensing. Fine, that's good. But the interesting point here is that you don't have atrophy, you don't have harmony, you don't have disharmony there and harmony over there. They're actually all combined and entwined. We don't have a divine sense of existence and a rotten sense of existence existing in separate vacuums of their own order.
Right.
They are all enmeshed together. So in that sense, it's here. That divine state is here. You know, it's on the end of your nose. The point here is, are you able to access it? If one is able to, if they have what's called sat, the Hindu will call sat or substance, they have this stillness, they have this internal quietude and a peacefulness, and they're able to access that kind of sense of divinity within them, because we all have the spark.
Oh, I love that. A sense of divinity within them.
Mm.
I just love listening to you.
It's also a bit like, say, for example, you know those fiber optics that have.
Yes.
In the center, you have the light bulb, and it travels out, and it's a spherical object. But there's maybe 2,000, you know, lines of fiber optics, and so. You know, the divine essence is there in the center, and the light is you on the end. You know, and there's I don't know how many billions, quite a few billion on the planet at the moment. We all have that spark divinity, that light there. It's encased internally, and it's found within the tabernacle of one's heart, because that's the ancient aspect of ourselves. And when you get into that sense of stillness, it is extremely sweet. Because at that point, when you're totally operating energetically in harmony, then you're now moving out, and now you're going beyond the current matrix that's holding and binding us and pushing us in and keeping us locked down.
Yes,
and so we're now moving out. And therein is that sense of freedom, the sense of divinity. And for that person who is able to get that sat substance, you know, in their practice, are feeling that divine substance, because they're having that access to it. So for them, it's very real. And so they speak their truth.
So, you know, I was on a private forum about 2 weeks ago, and the gentleman that was running this forum had made a really good point about the preparation for this new shift in humanity, the fact that there's this so-called event that we're on the horizon for this major shift vibrationally in every which way. He was mentioning that remote viewing was one of the key markers in preparation and allowing you to have a much smoother time at the ascension process. How do you feel about that?
Let's see. If we take RV as a skill, an ability, then to put to good use as an advantage in this process of thinning and ascending and the oncoming event, then so be it. But this is something that is accessed by few and not experienced by many.
Interesting.
And so, yeah, and so, one cannot really make an overstated advantage when there are so many of us who are tuning in and doing what we can all the same in so far as being directed and pulled and being awakened just a little bit more. I don't think it's a disadvantage with those not to be able to see or remote view. Wonderful if you can. If you have that string to your bow, then fine.
It's just like adding a tool to your toolbox, is what you're saying. Just one more way of connecting.
Internally, we our soul understands much, and the veil of which when we come into this paradigm we forget so much. But on a very deep soul directive, it understands. We don't necessarily have to consciously be busily doing. We can just be busily being.
You sound like my very first shrink. I'm not kidding. I'm gonna tell everybody this story. Now the whole world's gonna hear this, right? I moved from Southern California to Michigan. Okay, now I don't know about you. If you know anything about going from Southern California to Michigan, I left
It's a long way.
my career. I was extremely close with my father, all my friends, everything, right? I was 35 and I got there and there was no sunshine. So someone had said something like, well, of course you're having a difficult time. You bit off about five of the most stressful situations possible. And I looked at him like, huh? So I realized I couldn't talk to my husband about this. Like, I didn't want to dump all this on him. So I went and got a shrink. So I go in the door, and I sit down with him and I said, God, I'm having a really hard time with this. I'm blissfully in love and but I don't I can't I don't understand why I'm feeling this way. And he turned to me and he says, where are you from? And I said, Southern California. And he says, I've had eight new clients and they're all from Southern California. And I said, well, what are you saying? And he said, I think you're suffering from sad, seasonal whatever dysfunction. And I said, yeah, the weather is just terrible out here, And he says, listen, if I could have all my clients be like you, I would be broke, And it was just so funny. But anyway.
So clearly, it wasn't the San Andreas fault.
No, not at all. No, not at all.
Wasn't San
Oh,
Andreas fault. It
God.
was
So,
your fault. Sorry.
yeah, no kidding. So, Martin, I mean, are you meditating daily? And if so, how long? I mean, is this something that you do religiously?
Well, surfer is being made takes up so much time today. And as you can imagine, and getting so many creative ideas coming through and following them through and so forth, about being a young father, etc. and etc. So my meditations tend to be literally on my feet.
Right.
So when I so for example. Remaining centered in your feelings, and doing just the one thing. It's a meditation indeed, called focusing on one thing, and staying unmoved and not thinking too much, and just doing the one thing. And so
I love that.
this is something I've done for years now. And the lovely thing about that, as a mode of operating throughout the day, is that when you want to sit down and meditate, you can drop into it very quickly and instantly. and one is able to sense their electronic moving out. So for me, I'm living a busy life at the moment. That will change. It won't stay busy. We just moved, and so we're all settling in. So in between time of doing the weekly meditations that I'm currently doing, which is a sit-down meditation, in between it's a meditation indeed, which is you're doing one thing and you'll do nothing else, and you don't have to think. That's a good thing about that practice. It drives your wires up the wall, I assure you, because they'll say something, they'll give you the same instructions, it goes one in out the other. So, the typical bloke, saying one thing, you can't remember, it goes in and out. That's a downside.
So that's a good point. So what you're saying is there's a lot of different defining of meditation other than just sitting in the typical pose on the ground with your eyes closed and your fingers in the mudra or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for example, if you're in the office, okay, you're doing a task. If you're having to do, say, three tasks, don't think about the fourth, fifth, or sixth, or seventh, or think about lunch, or think about getting off at 12 o'clock, or when you're going to turn time, and so forth. And because what happens is that when you're focusing down on one thing, two things, or three, and that's all, you find you don't have to think about them because you can just do them. Particularly if you're in a daytime work where it's a routine, and you can just do that routine, and you don't have to think about it. Rather than get bored with it, take the opportunity to use it as a meditation, and you'll find that the clock just speeds around extra quicker. When you want to get home at the end of the day, the best thing to do is literally just focus on what you're doing, only do that, and that way you don't have to think. You're exiting linear time, you see, so it just really fast.
So let me get this straight. So you're telling the world right now that when you're working, folks, okay, all you got to do is just, focus on this one thing and you don't have to think, and the clock speeds around.
Well, that's correct. I mean, it should become natural, like walking. You don't have to think about walking if you're doing something that's routine.
That was funny.
That's an opportunity.
That was
The thing is when you when you're driving, to be there just driving, and then you wake up and you think, where am I? How did I get here? that's when you take it a step further. Probably not so good. Yeah,
that's so true. Especially, I mean, God, there is no sense of time anymore for me, anyway. I mean, I can't even remember what happened about an hour ago.
Yeah, quite so. No, this is very true. And time is really, it's got its own legs now and it's moving fast. And so if you do drop into just doing the one thing, your deed for that day, and you're just doing it.
And just don't think, folks. Just don't think.
It's the thinking gets you into trouble.
I'm sorry, that's funny. So how do you usually receive your downloads? Like describe your communication with spirit. How does that look?
Yeah, for sure. Well, the downloads are very clear, by and large, generally quite clear because of this practice that I've been doing now since the year. And so I might be doing something new. I could be doing, I could be ruffling the feather, doing the beds, tidying up, doing whatever one has to do, dishwasher, etc. and so forth. And you're just doing, you're not thinking. And so you're going about your work, not thinking. And not to say that you don't have, there are times when you do think, pick up the phone, make a phone call. Don't get me wrong, there are times when you're thinking good, practicing thinking is good. But in that space of quiet mind, in doing the deed and only that, that's when the information presents itself. That's when it comes through. And so, for example, if you're thinking about, you're thinking of doing something, whatever that might well be, but you're not quite got around to completely seeing how you're going to go about it, but you've kind of got an idea of what you want to do, kind of thing, And then what happens a day or two later or 3 days later, you're you're doing this, you've got this habit of doing your work without too much thinking, and then bang, it comes through, it presents itself, downloads very fast, and you get the whole kind of picture very quickly. Ah, I know exactly what to do. And it's multi-layered. You get these multi-layered ideas now, yes, of what you want it to do, present itself. And it has depth and breadth. And that's when you get the, aha, oh, that's it. Yeah.
Yes.
That all makes sense. And you have to write it down, you know. It's like, for example, if you're a writer, you know, or you're a poet or a musician. So, and suddenly, bang, the information comes in, presents itself to you. There's lots of it in one go. And you've got to write it down quick. You've got to get the lyrics down fast.
You know, it's I wanted you to answer that just like you did, very specifically, because there's so many out there that don't feel that they have this gift, that they are receiving these downloads, and they are a lot more than they think they are, or even realizing they are. And you described it in such a specific way, so that everybody understands that we're all getting this information. It's just how much are you paying attention to it?
And it's and you see, it's also a part of your construct to get this information downloaded. For example, the reality we have around ourselves, we are co-creating all the time with others. We are managing. One has to manage. It's an interesting idea to manage your reality. You know, we plant trees in our forest. Sometimes we get lost in business of the world in which we've created, we're doing too much, you know, then things change and we have a lot of free time, and then we fill the void with more stuff, you know.
Yes.
And so the idea there is to trim down the trees, cut down the trees so you can see the forest of the trees, and you can cut down some trees and get some space going, do your work during the day, do only that. Give yourself an opportunity to not think too much about anything else, and then you're being receptive to that which is going to come through, and it carries with it a sense of inspiration. It gives you a little buoyancy lift. Yeah, it's like this is the information you've been wanting. It gives you a sense of the next step on, if you like.
Yes, it does.
And that gives you that's the hint of that this is a download information that you're receiving.
Very, very true. Well, so Martin, it's getting close to the final part of the hour, but in these last several minutes, would you do me the favor of giving anyone your last bit of just some insights into what some of your other so-called students or participants have received and experienced through these training sessions, and you know what you've seen has taken place, you know, like statistically, how many people do you see really changing for the better?
That's a good question. I would say on par, I would say around 40% of people who come on the trainings go away with a shift, a change, an alteration, that which internally they are seeking and desiring and wanting occurs. I will say, I'm amazed and wonder and feel utterly privileged to have the responsibility to be in a position to be able to put the trainings on, but also make it an opportunity for people to come to the trainings and not just come away with contact, but actually come away with a sense of shift and change within themselves.
Yes.
And that's important. It's not about lights in the sky. It's not for us, you know, it's not about it. It's about making a shift and change internally. So when one goes away from the training, looking to see a shift, a breakthrough, and this is a joy.
And actually, you know, bringing the individual themselves online, like lighting up their own Merkaba, their own spaceship, you know, where they're beaming. And I think what you're doing is just such a great service to the planet. I'm honored that I've met you. I'm grateful. And I can't say enough good things about what I've learned already in the short period of time that I've gotten to know you. So.
At the end of the day, quite frankly, it's I'm a nobody with something to do, and once it's done, I'm off, and that's it,
You're off in your spaceship.
I'm off and gone,
Okay. Well, we will probably interview Martin again. We might start doing these 10-minute blurbs. If you don't do them on your website, I think I will on mine. But I just wanted to thank everybody for connecting again with galacticconnection.com. Stay tuned for next week. We have Cobra coming on. This ought to be very, very exciting about the up-and-coming prepareforchange.net and all the cool things that are happening for the Victory of the Light. So I thank you all again. You guys have a wonderful day. It's a great way to launch the month of July and August, since we just had the most amazing full moon last night. And I wish you all well. I love you all, and thank you for supporting us. We'll talk to you soon. And Martin, again, thank you for your time.
Always a deep pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Talk to you soon.